Remember, you can send us messages on the Odyssey app. Go to odyssey.com, KMOX, and right next to the Listen Live button, pardon me, you have a little microphone icon. Click on that, and you can record a 60-second message to us. It can be love the show, hate the show, Wheeler needs to wake up, Wheeler's wrong about the Cardinals, XYZ. And, yeah, man, everyone send him a wake-up message. Mm-hmm. Get him going. He had a shingles vaccine. Here also, I'm not a hypochondriac, but I always think I have what other people have. Does that make sense? So I don't just lay at home going, that's cancer. I'm not like that. It's one of the few idiosyncrasies I don't have. But listening to you talk about getting your shingles vaccine and how tired you are.
You're making you tired?
I feel like I had the vaccine.
Well, it's also just weird because you are the one with the most energy. And for you to not have the energy, it's like,
it's weird.
Where are we drawing our energy
from? I know. It's
from?
Weird for me, too. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ugh. I don't like it.
Yeah, we don't like it either.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah,
don't
make that noise again.
I'm just trying to wake up. That's the thing, is I can't wake up.
Let's get you a nice Celsius.
I've been doing, I've been drinking caffeines. I've been doing all that.
Took a nap.
I did.
Outside our boss's office.
Yeah.
Did he know you were there?
He knew. I told him.
Gave him a warning.
I was talking to her, talking some stuff, sportsy stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know, over here and lay down because I'm kind of tired.
Let's go to sleep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those times, man. It'll be bad. I'll be normal tomorrow.
Isn't this the weirdest job that we have?
It is quite strange.
It's so weird. I have a notebook in front of me with one page full of my crazy thoughts, and I'm just like, we're going to talk to Rachel and do Razor's Edge. Should I talk about this crazy thought first or second? What a weird job. Like, I saw on my TikTok for some reason, pardon me, it's like you when you got the flauta stuck in your sinuses.
Yeah, man. I hope
see,
now
don't I got what
that.
You had.
Yep.
I was down and out.
I had a vaccine. I had some chicken in my
nose. In my nose. How did that happen?
Had some sinus chicken.
But yeah, I had surgeons on my TikTok, and they're like, follow me around for a day. Oh, my God. They're cutting people open right and left.
Yeah.
And working like, I mean, 7-hour surgeries
nuts.
And stuff. Yeah.
It's nuts that a human does that.
Yeah.
My wife works at a vet's office, and they do like 8 surgeries a day on like various animals for various things. And I'm like, it's just so crazy that you wake up.
That's what they do.
You go in, you like operate on things that are inside of living creatures, and then you like go home and watch TV or whatever.
It is very odd. I also, for some reason, my algorithm on top of Phoebe driving home to KU and me having 4 hours of anxiety, it decided to show me truckers who are 18 years old.
What?
So little tiny people, tiny little teenagers out there in big rigs.
Why?
Because they can do it.
That's the age that you have to be?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Biden administration changed that, I think. I think
during
it was
COVID,
21,
right?
Or right after COVID when we were having supply chain issues, and it was like, hey, we got to do something.
Good idea. Truckers. There you go.
But it is scary. I share the driving anxiety to an extent. I get very nervous around trucks, like on the highway, or even just driving like downtown, driving down Jefferson. If there's a big, like a big rig, and it starts to swerve into my lane, I'm just like, ugh. So the thought of an 18-year-old driving that does give me pause at times. But then there are 18-year-olds who are more responsible than me. So, you know. It just depends
on
the person.
But then there are regular old 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot that are not.
Yeah. But I would think if you wanted that job, you probably have some semblance of
it.
Yeah, you feel a responsibility to.
I hope so. Razor's Edge.
Okay, so this is a fun, silly topic, but let's make it serious too at the same time. It is also, if you have little kids in the car, you might want to turn the station because it is about a sex robot named Samantha. Samantha is the most popular sex robot on the market right now. She was invented by someone named Dr. Sergey Santos, and she has a new feature. She has the ability to say no if she feels disrespected or bored. She can basically shut down certain parts of her.
It's like a Twilight Zone.
Yeah, it is. But this doctor said at the insistence of his wife, he created this new feature that Samantha, the sex doll, would be able to deny or not participate in certain things if you are too aggressive with her. So she goes into dummy mode where basically like not to get too graphic here, but there are certain features the sex doll has that shut down whenever it's been triggered. I find this very interesting because the thought of giving, well, hold on, let's back up a second. Even though she's saying no, you can still use the sex doll. So it's like a weird thing where it's like, oh, we gave her consent, except you can override that consent if you want, which is strange.
Mm-hmm.
I think the whole thing is a little odd to give her a choice in the matter. And here I am using like pronouns as if this is an actual person. But whenever you make something look like a human, you are going to start thinking of it as a human. But it just got me to thinking, like, we're going to have so many more robots in the future. Sex robots are not. There will be robots that help you wash your dishes and, you know, all this other sort of stuff. How human are we going to make them? And do we have this inclination to give them something that's disguised as a choice, but really not a choice just because they look human?
Yeah.
Like, if it's a little BB-8 looking type robot that goes around, like, I have my robot vacuum. It's just like a little disc. And I do give it personality traits because I'm a freak and I'm like, oh, look at that. There he goes. But for the most part, you know, I'm not looking at that and thinking, there is my equal. But if you create a robot that looks like you, and then you're giving it all these features, thoughts and emotions, the ability to say no, at what point is it different than you?
Yeah. So I'm a lot of things, but I'm not a sex doll guy. But if I ever was going to be, what ruined it for me was Westworld.
Oh, yeah.
That was really disturbing.
It was very disturbing because in that show, if you haven't seen the show, the robots look exactly like you and I. And they also have actual emotions. That's the thing that's uncovered throughout the course of the series is like these robots have evolved to the point where they're as human as humans. We just wipe their memory all the time. So they don't remember all the horrible things that are happening to them, but the trauma stays with them. So it's like, oh, I don't know how accurate that is, but it is certainly terrifying to think and to invent these things that are not human, but we can do human things with them and be cruel to them and, you know, all sorts of different things, and then just be like, eh, there's no consequences for that. Just wipe the memory.
Yeah, that's the most troubling thing to me, is that now you've opened up a whole new realm in what should just be a sex toy, essentially. You are now opening up the realm for, as Rachel put, things like cruelty and, you know, abuse, harmful actions. And that is allowing for a new lane to fulfill certain impulses that some people might have.
We had this conversation years and years ago when, disturbingly, they were talking about smaller sex dolls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we had the discussion and people called in about, well, if there are people with that inclination and they can act that out with a machine, that's better than acting it out on people. But that could also lead to the inclination to act it out on people when the machine's not enough.
Yes.
And that goes for any of it. You know, who knows? I mean, this is one of these things we're not going to know for another 20, 30, 40, 50 years.
Yeah. So even taking out the sex robot part and looking at it, just let's say you have a butler that's a robot. Unless you're putting consciousness into it, it's still not a being, right? There's a difference between being programmed and having consciousness.
Right.
If you're just programmed as a, you know, you're my butler and I say, I want you to go do this. And it says, I don't want to. That's just the programming. Unless you're building a consciousness, which is what happened in Westworld, right? They were building consciousness. That was the whole idea. The artificial intelligence. I think isn't that the line? Like, if you're going to be giving something quote unquote intelligence, if you're going to be giving something consciousness, that's a different thing than just essentially a computer that can clean your yard or do whatever.
I think it's the line for the robot. I don't think it's the line for you. I think that if you have something that looks exactly human and acts exactly human, even though it doesn't have consciousness, and you want to be with this thing and it says, no, I'm shutting down for the night, and you override it, I think that steals a little bit of your soul, I would think.
I agree with that.
I agree.
Which is why it's almost weird that they created this setting in the first place. And this doctor is like, my wife told me I should do it. as if it's like, oh, a lady said it, so it's perfectly fine. It's like, well, no, I mean, let's think this through. There are going to be people who are going to intentionally trigger the dummy mode to get some sort of satisfaction of like, I'm aggressive on purpose. I want it to be like this. And then you're feeding into this horrible impulse from a bad person.
Yeah.
Sorry, Razor's Edge is a total downer.
It's the edge.
But it is.
It's super interesting.
On the larger scale, that's what we're going to be facing soon.
Yeah.
Is when does an AI become conscious? When does it become its own being? It does it. Maybe you could argue that it's artificial no matter what, and whatever it has is not real. But I think that that's going to be an ethical question in the not too distant future when it comes to all forms of AI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think Dave makes an excellent point, because I tend to side with you, Wheels. Not to pretend that I know your side, but saying like, no matter what, they're not going to be human because they don't actually have consciousness. It's all program. But if it's an imitation that, if you're drawn in by that imitation and you still act as if they're not human, that is a very gray area to exist in.
Do you think they'll become mainstream?
Sex dolls?
Just companion dolls?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
Like, you'll go to someone's house who's single and meet Samantha, who will bring you a cocktail. Like, do you think it'll become like that?
Maybe in like 100 years or something, it'll be less weird. I think for our generations, it's still going to be stigmatized.
Taboo.
Like, oh, wow, that's interesting. But I think, as we become more isolated and more catered to, it only makes sense that we would have robot companions.
In my show prep, I don't know if any of you guys saw this, they have created a robot. It's a real thing. And evidently, it's not a joke. To feed people while they play video games.
Mm.
Oh my God! They both looked. Intrigued. Both of their eyebrows went up.
They both look so interested right now.
You don't
now
say.
Now we're talking.
Is it so hard to just lean over and get
not.
The fries?
It's not. It's not hard to pause or whatever.
Hey, if the robot's offering, all right. I'm not saying I'm not saying it's too hard. But if someone's like, "Hey, you want me to feed you fries
Isn't
while you
that
play
like
this game?"
The first step into WALL-E.
Oh, we are so many more than one step into WALL-E. I basically live like WALL-E now.
I'm 224 DGS. So, I'm trying hard not to look 60, but I think I am. And here's a symptom of it. I want to see what you guys think. Over the weekend, looking at TikTok, the algorithm thought that I wanted to see 18-year-olds driving big rigs and 16-year-olds getting their pilot's license. 16 is a baby. You just stopped breastfeeding. And the instructor to this one 16-year-old was 18. So the boss is 18 teaching a 16-year-old how to fly a plane. And it just seemed insane to me. Is it because I'm old, or because I'm old, am I smart? And we shouldn't be giving planes to 16-year-olds.
It's probably less dangerous than giving them cars.
I disagree.
What?
I think it's more dangerous to give a 16-year-old a plane.
I would argue that statistically there's ample evidence that them driving is way more dangerous than them being up in the air.
That's because there's not that many of them that have had planes before.
No, I'm just saying that anything that's happening where there is less
every
traffic.
Every 16-year-old drives a car. If every 16-year-old drives a plane, those statistics would be vastly higher.
You're both making good points.
First of all, that's a weird analogy because, every 30-year-old has a plane too. Like, that's not the point. They're amongst a group of people that are pilots. And I don't see why being in an open... I'm not saying it's necessarily the greatest idea.
You flying with a 16-year-old?
Would I? Sure. Why not?
Sure. No,
you ever
course.
Seen those kids
I don't know
play
what I
video games?
Say.
I mean, good Lord, man. They know what they're doing. And again, you're not going to run into another car. You're not going to run into other traffic. You could have a mistake that leads to a plane crash, but we know statistically that is a very low probability.
It's a very low...
I mean, it's the numbers are the numbers, man. I mean,
teenagers. Numbers are the numbers because 16-year-olds don't fly planes, Kevin.
Andrew.
Kevin.
Relative to the number. I mean, the odds of the most dangerous drivers.
Relative to what number? What statistics are you basing this on?
How many plane crashes involve teenagers in a year? What percentage of teenagers who fly crash their planes?
What percentage of teenagers fly?
That's not the point. It's within the group of people that do the thing. So if I don't know
so,
what.
So if there's six of the, so your argument is that if there are six 16-year-olds that fly a plane each year and none of them crash, that means that 16-year-olds have a 100% success rate no matter what,
not,
of flying a
freaking not what
plane.
I'm saying. I'm saying it's not more dangerous than giving them the keys to a car surrounded by thousands of other cars when teenagers are the most impulsive drivers out there. They are the most reckless drivers out there because you are reckless when you're a teenager.
But they'll be better off in a plane, which is statistically far more
difficult. They're
not going
to run into another plane.
That's not the only thing they could run into.
I understand, but the odds of the other things happening are low. That's the point.
Wheeler's waking up.
I know. All you got to do is pick a fight. I'll wake up.
Welcome back, guys. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton from the Cardinals. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, buddy. How was your holiday weekend?
Oh, it was great. I actually loved the trip to New York. That was fun. My wife is here in Milwaukee. Had a day game yesterday. Unfortunately, didn't turn out the way we wanted to in terms of the result. But it's the weather's beautiful here in Milwaukee, and let's hope the results are good tonight.
Boy, the 14-7 game against the Yankees, duh, was so much fun to watch. I can only imagine how much fun it was to call.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, the part of it that is kind of in the back of your head is, boy, I wish I would see this more often. But, you know, you're not going to see that very often. 20-plus hits, 14 runs. Felt like, you know, as John said, you know, the extra point was good, and they got their 14 runs. I mean, it was really kind of one guy after another. It was a team thing. Everybody did well. But a lot of feel-good things, too, including Goldie swinging the bat really well lately. And, you know, just the home runs from the 5-for-5 from Walker, the home runs from Baker and Walker and Nukbar, just a lot of good feel-good moments there.
You know, you'll get this, Rick, and Wheels, you'll get this too. Obviously, baseball fans in general, Cardinals fans in particular, want to see wins. They want to see success. But you know what I think they want to see? They want to see fun. They want to see joy.
Oh,
they want to see the guys having fun together like we did when we were in Cory League.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. In fact, you know, part of what you want to see at the ballpark, and I'm starting to notice this more. Somebody mentioned it to me a couple of weeks ago, just the idea that there are no villains in the game anymore. So I think part of the fun sometimes can be, I'm going to go because the Cubs are here. And, you know, I don't really feel like the Cardinals have a rival right now. It seems, at least on the field, it doesn't feel that way. There's no Dusty Baker to get mad at. There's no, you know, it just seems a little bit bland as far as kind of that kind of tension at the ballpark. There's no Brandon Phillips and Yadier Molina. And Yadi, you know, everybody didn't like Yadi. Every place we went, they would boo him. They're not booing our guys. I mean, the only boos we hear are actually cheers for Nukbar from the Cardinal fans that travel on the road. It's just a little, you know, fun is fun. You can have it without that, but I think that's part of it.
Do you think some of it too, Rick, is just the record? Like, you know, because the Cardinals, if you talk to people in Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Chicago, for 20 years, they hate the Cardinals. They still do.
Yeah.
But they always hated the Cardinals because the Cardinals were always the team they had to beat. And it was always the one that was good. And it didn't really change much. Do you think that from our perspective, it's changed? Our view has changed because it's not that same thing, that same dynamic.
Yeah, I would say very clearly that in the 80s, the Cardinals did not hate the Cubs at all because, well, we just beat them most of the time. And the team that we didn't like was the Mets because it was always 1-2 with the Mets. Now, we were in the same division as them. And you're also playing everybody. You don't have a chance to really develop rivalries the same way. We're, you know, not very many games left in the division the rest of the way for the Cardinals, actually, which is also odd. They play the Reds one more time and these two games here in Milwaukee, but it's just not enough of those. Play the Pirates too, but it's still, you know, not enough of like the Cubs weekend at the end when you're two games up or two games out. That just breeds some fun, I think. And, you know, you can still have fun at the ballpark. There's still a lot of great things. And just watching Mason Wynn play shortstop is fun in and of itself.
You know, that's an interesting point, Rick. I think a lot of what's changed as far as the fun element, you know, Major League Baseball is trying to create more action, right? That's the whole point. I don't think anybody's worried about runs scored because they're about the same as they've been throughout the history of the game. But there's a lot less action. There are fewer balls in play, and, you know, that means fewer great defensive plays. That means less action on the bases. So I know that's the goal, but, man, there are some unique talents out there right now. I mean, you know, Mason Wynn is that for the Cardinals. the guy that can run and throw 100 miles an hour across the diamond and hit and do all of that. But then you look at Shohei Ohtani and Elly De La Cruz. There are so many unicorns in the game right now. And I think that's kind of where it's going, is the star power is as much a draw now as maybe the other things.
Yeah, and I think it's always key to have the star power in context of the team. So, the Cardinals are not just – I think the Cardinals had a problem in the late 90s when the team was Mark McGwire. The team wasn't doing very well in the late 90s, but it was all – the competition was not the Cardinals versus the Cubs. It was McGwire versus Sammy Sosa. And I know a lot of front office people for the Cardinals thought, hey, this is kind of fun, but it doesn't last, and it's not – what we typically do, because it's more about the team winning. And, honestly, winning covers a multitude of sins. And if, the Cardinals could just, get back to that. I mean, they've been on. So here's the deal. The Cardinals fans have been on a roller coaster ride for 130 games. And when we go on a roller coaster, sometimes you want to get off the roller coaster and kind of get your grounding again. But we've been on the roller coaster the entire time, because it's kind of been so up and down. You just can't quite get a feel for where you're headed.
And we know that this offseason is going to be maybe not a roller coaster, but it's going to be very exciting and eventful, whether we make the playoffs or not, either way.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of things. I think everybody understands that there's going to have to be some macro changes. The right word of the day is pivot, but I think it's going to be past the pivot. I think we're going to have to take some right turns and some left turns. And I don't know what that is, but I think just up and down, minor leagues, up and down the whole – system for the Cardinals, I think everything's going to get looked at to say, look, how do we get to be the Cardinals again? And, I think it starts when right after we're done celebrating your birthday, Dave. I think that's day one. And then after that, let's just move forward with whatever's next with the Cardinals.
It's an interesting time, because the Cardinals aren't bad, right? I mean, I know that for fans, it's not what you're used to. So there, I was talking about it. My dad's rule was, I don't care what grades your friends are getting. You've shown me you get this. That's what I expect of you. And obviously the Cardinals are the A student, and that's why the expectations are what fans have. It's just an interesting dynamic, because, when you're a 500 team, you're not a bad team. You're the opposite of bad or good. You're just middling, and you're essentially, I don't know how you'd look at it, but you're 6-7 games away from being where you want to be, but you're also 6 or 7 games away from being where you were last year, which was good.
Well, that's right. Well, and the bottom line of all that, in terms of the Cardinals fans' expectation, is there's nothing more fun than going to October baseball at Busch Stadium. No. I mean, that is just such a blast, and I think that's kind of where we want to get to. And I know fans are clamoring for more than just first round in and out as a wild card choice, but it's still fun even if you're a wild card, because who knows? I mean, Arizona went from wild card to world champion. I mean, it can happen, and so we know it can happen. It's happened several times. So the point is, that's the fun we want. We love games in September, pennant race games, but you also love the post-September games the most.
Looking on the field, Rick, I know I don't remember who said it, but the old cliche, don't fall in love in March and don't fall in love in September, right? So don't fall in love with small sample sizes, right, in spring training or at the end of the year. But regardless of whether or not there's a run, and 5.5 games is where you're at right now, so it's not a number that's impossible. But regardless of that, how much do you think, just in your experience as a player and now, having been a broadcaster for a long time, how much weight does a month of September carry when it comes to guys essentially making a name for themselves? Guys like Lucan Baker, who's done a lot of really nice things since he's been called up.
Well, as I've said several times on broadcast, I say people remember the first thing in the list and the last thing on the list. If you give them 10 things and say, what's the list of 10 things I just said? They'll remember the first thing and the last thing. So there is something to having a good start. I mean, we're still talking about Riley O'Brien's spring training. He struggled yesterday, but in my mind, I still remember vividly how good he was in spring training. That's sticking in my mind, just as it will how somebody finishes in the month of September. So honestly, I think it's important for players too, beyond what I think about that or what fans remember, is their jobs are on the line. I mean, they all know that. Everybody knows in that clubhouse, if I don't finish well in September and these macro changes that might take place with the Cardinals going forward, I mean, who knows where I end up with that? I mean, they all get that. They sign up for it. And so they're playing to win, but they're also playing to finish strong.
So when I was a kid, it seemed like every team was a team, and Garvey was going to play first base, and Ron Say was going to play third base, and I knew Davey Lopes is going to be here, and DeConcepcion's going to be there, and it just didn't change. And with the Cardinals, it's been different and somewhat frustrating because it's like, this guy's in left field now. Now this guy's back to AAA. Yep. Now they're here. Now they're there. Do I just not watch enough baseball outside of St. Louis that this is the way that all teams are now?
Most teams are that way, Dave. I would say that. Now, the Atlanta Braves tend to not be that way. They just throw their eight guys out there, and now they've been, several of them have been hurt.
Right.
And they had a couple of guys that didn't perform well, including their center fielder, so they had to go get a new guy. But they basically like to roll out the same guys. You look at Red Shandy's lineups when he managed the 67 Cardinals. The bench players had about 10 at-bats all year. The relievers, the relievers had a few innings, and there was only nine, total pitch. I mean, it was just here's our nine, let's go beat them. And it has changed. I think the economics has changed that a little bit. I think that's partly why. And you've got guys that you're trying to correct their, you're trying to help their career from kind of going the wrong direction too. So I think that's, that in terms of injury, so I think that's what they're trying to protect against. Again, that's still driven by salary, though. They make so much money,
right.
They realize we don't want this guy hurt.
Yeah, and obviously we've learned a lot, too, right? I mean, we understand. If you look at, it's not baseball, but you look at how much in the NBA they talk about workload management, and players talk about sleep. Like, that's part of like one of their big routines. And I know big league players are the same way, too. Like, we know how much sleep you need to get to be at your maximum performance level. And as we gain that knowledge, obviously you're going to want to act on it to a degree, which is why a record like Cal Ripken's for playing every day, that's just not going to happen. Nobody's going to let their players do that.
Right. I mean, and honestly, I just heard something in New York. I don't know all the details of this, and I don't want to say I've got it exactly right, but I was told that after most games, especially when they're traveling, the Yankees have about 45 minutes to an hour where they have a group meditation thing at the end of every game. Now, I guess if I lived in New York City, I might want that too. I mean, maybe that's part of it. Being a New Yorker, I can say that. But, I mean, there's a lot of stress that goes to playing in New York. But I mean, that's where we've gotten to. We're trying to optimize everything physically because you've got, the best people in the world competing, and you want to get that edge somehow. And if it's de-stressing a player or getting better sleep or getting better nutrition, guys do not do some of the things they used to do in baseball, and that's a very good thing, I would say, in certain terms of some of the habits that used to be part of plane flights across the country.
You know, it's true, too, Dave, in music. You know, in the 70s, 80s, 60s, the rock star was, sex, drugs, rock and roll, living the life. Now these guys, they're on the treadmill every day. They don't drink on the tour. They're eating well. They work out. And it's like, because it's the same idea. You're trying to maximize your performance. And, look.
I'm pretty drunk right now. All right, buddy.
Funny.
Have a great night, and I'll see you on Friday.
Yeah, good to be with you guys. Just see you Friday.
251 DGS. I just told Rach that she looks especially pretty today. She's wearing a shirt that looks like a paint shirt from third grade, and that is a compliment. I love paint shirts. I love the schmuck. I love your dad wearing your dad's dress shirt backwards. They're just, I'm probably, people younger than 50 are like, what the hell is he talking about? Did you guys have paint shirts?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or just in general, like craft shirts. And it always is. It's always like, it was one of my dad's shirts from the 70s that was still in the house for who knows what reason. And
you can really separate people out by probably a minority of kids who liked the classroom. And then the rest of us, and I was to the nth degree on this, who when we went to art, music, PE, was just, I would come alive.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in the classroom, I was just like, oh, death.
Yeah, I was all right with those, and I was good with PE. I didn't like the art or music classes very much.
Of course.
You're too manly.
No, it wasn't that. I just wasn't good at them.
Mm.
I have no artistic ability. Shocking, I know.
Art was fun.
Art was fun.
I just, everything I made looks stupid, though.
Well, sure.
we do these little porcelain things, like, we're going to make this, and I made it, and it just looks like just a blob.
That was me in shop class. In seventh grade, you had to take shop. If you were a boy, how weird is that? You had to take shop, and if you were a girl, you could, but you had to get permission from your parents, and it would be like a deal, and we had printing. We had metal. We had wood. In wood class, we made a boomerang. Mine never flew. In print class, I made a thing with RAMS for the Rams. The simplest thing you could make didn't work. In metal class, we made some sort of a tool. Didn't work. And then in small engine repair, I was so bad that at the end of the class, the final was taking apart the engine and putting it back together in a certain way. And in front of me, my group friends said, "Can we do this without Dave?"
Oh,
I know. And my teacher, Mr. Hunter, who is Catfish Hunter's brother, didn't even hesitate. He's like, "Yes, you can," because it was so clear to everyone that I had zero aptitude.
Yeah.
I mean, that I know what it feels like to be terrible at something.
And it's not a bad thing to find out.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, I think it's important sometimes to find out what you're not good at. And I found out when I was a kid, I'm not good at music and I'm not good at art, so I guess I'm going to be good at the other things. Or, you find the other things that you are good at. You got to fail, though, to find out what you're good at.
What were you guys bad at?
Everything.
I had a hard time with... Once I, learned how to study... things got better, but you kind of just think like, oh, I don't know that, there's a process of getting to the point. Maybe I'm not making any sense.
No, either. I get it. You didn't have the tools.
Yeah. And
so you just kind of struggle.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, why isn't this coming easily to if you're used to picking up things easily and then something doesn't come easily, that is tough. Mm-hmm.
Easily to you?
I mean, art did and music did. But with music, every music class I ever took, they would get frustrated because my timing was, I didn't like the metronome or something on the piano. I would just want to play it in my own timing, which is worthless. That's the opposite of what a music class is supposed to be. But I liked the more creative side of things way more than I liked the academic side.
Did you guys get forced into doing that stupid recorder thing? Playing the recorder?
Yeah, I loved playing the recorder.
I never had a recorder.
Oh, I used to pretend.
You didn't actually blow into it?
I would just pretend because I knew I was bad at it.
Aww. I'm sure they knew you were pretending.
I'm sure they did, and I didn't care. I was just like, I'm not doing it. It's okay. I'll just sit here and I'll move my fingers like I know what I'm doing.
See, I couldn't wait to get the recorder because my brother was 2 years ahead of me and had a recorder, and I'm like, someday I'm going to have one of those little instruments. And he carried it in a pouch. It was so fun.
I picture Wheeler in school, the way that he reacted to Ranji, like, I'm not into it. We're going to play recorders today, Kevin. Not into it.
That's probably not too far off.
I remember thinking everyone was brain dead when they couldn't get ta ta ti ti ta.
Ta ta ti ti ta.
You don't remember that?
No.
Ta ta ti ti ta. Ti ta 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 ti ti ta. It was the way to learn the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy, and other people couldn't do it, and I judged them.
I must have missed it. Rise gonna make you zombie someday. You got mud
on you. Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.